Hello, 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 mamas, and welcome to another episode of Angel Moms Hopes of Heaven, brought to you by Alana Song. I'm Angela Presley, your host for today's podcast. And today I would like to welcome another angel mom. Her name is Marcy Larson, and I am so excited to have her here. She also has her own podcast, so I was just really excited to get her on mine, because I believe this is the actual first angel mom that I'm interviewing that has their own podcast. So I am so excited to have her. She's going to tell us all about her son, Andy, and all about her journey and her purpose and what's going on in her life. So welcome, Marcy. Welcome.
Well, thank you so much, Angela. I really appreciate being asked to be on. It is kind of fun for me to be in the other chair. You know, yeah. I've been on a few podcasts before, but this is honestly the first one that has been done on Zoom, which is the same way I do it. So yes. It was so weird for me not to give the welcome myself. Yeah. It is really unusual. So I love it. Love it.
Yes. Welcome. So where would you like to get started with?
Well, I would just love to tell you about my Andy.
Yes.
If I can.
Perfect.
So, yeah. So I had three biological children and one foster son. So we were a family of six and living a pretty busy life. I am a pediatrician. My husband's an anesthesiologist, and we had these four kids still at home. My oldest was the foster son. He had just graduated from high school when Andy had his accident, or when we had our accident, I should say. And then I have my daughter, who was 16 years old. My son Andy was 14, and Peter was 12. Andy was really in a really good spot in life in general. He had always kind of suffered from anxiety and ADHD, and he had struggled. But that summer, he was really coming into his own. He had just gotten and was just been enrolled in the West Michigan Aviation Academy. He wanted to be a pilot. Yes. So he was going to be a freshman in high school at this brand new school. And he was so excited about it. I mean, that summer before they had their orientation, and they picked out like a dozen kids just by drawing that got to go up in the helicopter on that day. And he got picked. And I have a video on my own phone because he forgot his phone. And so I have him talking on the phone, videoing out the window of the helicopter that he was in. He that whole summer had practiced with the soccer team for the high school because he really wanted to join the soccer team. And he had never been really that good at soccer. He was always sat on the bench, but he was the biggest cheerleader, man. Yeah. That kid, I mean, he just loved being a member of a team, and it didn't matter that he wasn't the best and wasn't the most talented. He just cheered everybody else on, you know, he just loved that. And so that summer he did that with the team. He was so nervous at first because he was tiny. He wasn't even 5 feet tall when he died. So he was a little guy, and he's there with these big high school kids, and all summer he practiced with them. And a few days before he died, the week before he died, they had tryouts, and he not only made the team, but he became a starter. He was named as a starter.
Wow.
On the JV soccer team. And I remember him saying to me, "Mom, this is the best soccer I've ever played in my whole life." He was named a starting left striker, and he was just over the moon excited. And I remember thinking to myself, "Oh God, what is going to happen when this coach realizes he is really not that good?" Because I was like, I've watched him for years. He's not that good. And yet he was like kicking everything with his left foot, making all these goals. It was like crazy. And now I feel like it was a little gift from God to just give him this amazing couple of weeks. And he had his freshman orientation, and that was going great. And I picked him up from school, and he was like, "Mom, the kids at my new school all think I'm funny." And I said, "Honey, because you are funny." You know, he had a beautiful voice. He sang on, was a head chorister for the Grand Rapids Choir of Men and Boys. So he had just this Beautiful, beautiful voice. And it was tremendous. If you want to hear him sing, you can come to my website. My website is andysmom.com. And there is a click to a link of him singing a amazing solo. So, but anyway, he was just doing well and really flying high that week. And we picked him up. I picked him up from orientation that day. And one of his favorite expressions to say was, "Mom, I'm so excited." He would always say, "I'm so excited." And I'd be like, "What are you excited about, Andy?" Uh-huh. And he would, you know, have this, that, or the other thing. And that day I picked him up. And he said, "I'm so excited." And I said, "Oh, are you excited for soccer practice? Are you excited for school? Excited for your friends?" And he goes, "No, I'm excited for the Whitecaps game." And the Whitecaps was the minor league soccer team, or not soccer team, the minor league baseball team that we have here in Grand Rapids. And we were going to a game that night. Uh-huh. So my office rented out a deck of this game from all of our employees and all the families. And you know, we had to pay for our tickets, but uh-huh. once you got there, you had all the food you could eat. So Peter, actually my youngest, had not even eaten all day because he wanted to eat so much food at this baseball game. So we were trying to decide who was all going to go because it was kind of, it was still kind of expensive to go. And my son, my husband was on call at the hospital. And so I didn't know, should we go? Should we not? Mm-hmm. And I remember my son, Peter, saying, "Mom, I think it would be a great mother-son event." And I was like, "Okay, all right. So I'll just go with the two boys." My daughter had a violin lesson she was going to go to. My foster son was working. Mm-hmm. So it was just going to be the three of us. And then suddenly at the last second, my husband gets out early. Like it was the shortest call shift ever. And now he was out and he could go to the game. So I called into the office and I said, "Are there any extra tickets?" And, one of the nurses said, "Oh yeah, we have an extra ticket. So-and-so's not going. Do you want me to drop it by your house?" And I said, "No, no big deal. It's on the way. I'll just stop at the office." I'm saying all these things because there were so many like little things that had I done differently, everything would have turned out differently. Right. So we were sitting at home. I was doing some paperwork and for Peter's checkup the next day, actually. And Andy was coming home. He was texting me that he was on his way home for soccer practice because we were doing a carpool with another family. And he got home. And instead of going straight out, I let him go upstairs and run and change. And so he changed his clothes and went downstairs. And we all hopped in the car, the four of us. We stopped off at the office, grabbed that ticket, and then got on the freeway. Mm-hmm. And we're on the freeway. And the last thing I remember is turning to my husband because we were in traffic. It was a construction zone, so it was a little bit slower anyway. And then we were over, had gone over to the exit lane, which was backed up a long ways for the game because it's always backed up on game days to let out. But it was actually still moving because sometimes right before the game, it gets so it's totally stopped. But this was still kind of moving. And I said, this isn't going to be too bad. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to be all right here. Last thing I remember.
Wow.
Because the next thing I remember, and this still chokes me up, but it was 5 years ago.
Oh yeah.
The next thing I remember, I was sitting in the grass on the side of the road on the August day. I can still feel it. I can feel it. I can see all of the fire trucks and ambulances and police cars and people.
Yeah.
And I'm just open my eyes up and I look and there's my husband in front of me sitting and he's bleeding on his head. And I turn my head and look over my right shoulder and they're doing CPR on my baby.
Oh.
And he has needles coming out of his chest and three people working on him. And I turned to my husband and I said, "Is he going to be okay?" And he said to me, "Yes." And then he paused. And then he said, "They're doing the best they can." And I knew that meant no. I mean, I knew it did. And I later learned that when the accident happened, my husband stayed conscious. My son, Peter, became unconscious for a short period of time. I lost consciousness. He looked around. He saw both Peter and I were both kind of moving. And then Andy, nothing. no yeah. movement. And so he was frantically tried to get him out. And it turns out an army medic was there and pulled off, and he was trying to get Andy out through the passenger door. So what had happened was a woman was not paying attention at all, driving a BMW, had her son in the car actually as well, was going very fast, highway speeds. We've had other witnesses say that she was going far too fast for the construction anyway. And then she was also going to the baseball game. So it made no sense that she wasn't over in that exit lane. And then I imagine we never got a straight answer really, but I imagine she realized she was supposed to be over. She went over, her 15-year-old son was in the front and just screamed, "Mom, stop." But she didn't, she hit us. We hit the car in front of us, then ricocheted off, went through a sign and ended up in the ditch. So they eventually, my husband had to pull Andy out all the way through the front seat, through his driver's door. We were in a minivan and had to go all the way up and around, and pulled him over and started working on him for a long time himself, because, you know, he's an anesthesiologist. That's what he does. And he was bleeding a lot, and he just kept thinking to himself, "I just need to get in an IV. I just need to get him some fluids. I just need to get his airway secure. I just need," like, he just kept thinking in doctor mode.
Right.
The whole time. And people kept coming, you know, the firemen would come, people would come. And no one at first really took over for him, because he has the most training to do the best job. So it was until all the paramedics got there and said, "Dr. Larson, we're going to take over now." And I think they knew probably at that point, then there was probably very little they could do, but they did take over and let him. They said, "You need to be with your wife." And then when I came to, and in fact, apparently I had been conscious, but really not aware, because that really bothers me a lot to this day, that I was like walking around and not doing anything with my son because I had no idea what was happening. Mm-hmm. But then when I became aware, I just started just screaming over and over, "Please God, please God, please."
Yes. Yes.
Just begging, begging. And then the fireman was like, "You need to go be with your other son," because they needed, because I was hysterical and I needed to get away. So they put me in the fire truck with Peter, who, poor thing, Peter was in the fire truck, but the door was open and he was watching all of this happen, watching everything, which we didn't know for a couple weeks before he actually admitted that he had seen everything.
Yes.
And I remember saying to Peter, honey, we just need to pray. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't in there very long at all, before they got me out and they pulled me in an ambulance and they said, "Ma'am, we need to check you out." I actually was bleeding from the head myself and had some issues too. But that's not what they wanted to do too. They had me come out so they could get me away from Peter, and they put me and my husband in an ambulance, sat us in a chair, not on an exam table, and said words that I will never forget. They said, "Despite our best efforts, we were unable to save your son." So there he died on the side of the road. And I think as a doctor mom too, that really killed me, because like, I've seen kids die. I've been there when kids die. But like in my mind, kids at least make it to the hospital. Mm-hmm. You make it to the hospital where someone can try to save you. Someone like me, someone like my husband.
Yes.
But he didn't make it to the hospital. You know, and that was hard for me. It was really hard. So that's how I lost my boy, my amazing boy.
Wow. Totally, totally relate to a lot of what you've said in describing your day with your family and losing your son. I just got a couple of questions here. With your husband, with it being his son, did he automatic jump in the doctor mode, or?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. It sounded like, I mean, when I've talked to him later, he just did. It was so automatic to him. But his thing, he just kept thinking, "I just need the supplies, right? I just need all of that." I mean, it turns out none of that would have helped. he actually, his spinal cord was severed immediately. He died instantly. So no matter what he would have done, there was no saving him. But we didn't know that, right, until after the autopsy. And he just saw him bleeding and thought, I just need to get him blood volume. I just need to, right? He just kept thinking he would be able to do that because that's what he does.
Yeah. Now, with you both being in the medical field, and like you just said, I see kids die all the time. I see, you know,
although I'm in general pediatrics, so I don't see it all the time, but I have been with families, right? Especially in the past, in my training, for sure. I'd been there. And what's so funny is I learned so much after experiencing it myself, because I learned really how everything I thought was the right thing to do was wrong.
There you have it. There you have it.
Everything was wrong.
I was going to ask, to describe to us, now that you know, now that you've sit in the seat, because one hand before Andy, you lost Andy, this is my job. This is what I have to do. I don't know if it's scripted. This is what, but now that you're mama.
Yeah, in the it's seat, totally different. It's so funny because I had been in my training, especially, like I said, I'd been there when kids had died. And there's one time that I always thought I screwed it up really bad. So there was this patient. She had been in our peds ICU for like a year. I mean, she was a sick little girl. But we as residents, and it was in my training, had really gotten to know the family. You know, mom or dad was there every night. I got to be friends with mom. We would sit up at night and talk. Wow. And that little girl was like a little fixture in the peds ICU. And I mean, everyone knew she was sick, but no one thought she was going to die. At least I didn't. Yeah. I didn't think she was going to die.
Yeah.
And one day I was on service that week. So, you know, you're on service for like a month and then you're off and you do other things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you're on call and whatever. But that month she was my patient. I was on service. And I come in at 7 o'clock one morning and she died.
Yeah.
An hour and a half before she died. And I still remember it so vividly because I was sitting there at the desk and tears were coming. And I thought to myself, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry. And I'm trying to hold myself together. And I get myself together like, I got to go in there. I got to go in and talk to this family. You can't cry. You can't cry.
Yes.
And I walk in and I see this sweet mother holding her little girl who is now gone and doesn't have any of the tubes or any of the lines or anything that had been hooked up with her. She's just holding her girl. And I started to cry. And she opened up her arms and hugged me, and we hugged with her baby between us.
Yes.
And I cried. And I mean, I wasn't like sobbing like she needed to console me, but I was crying because I was so moved and I felt so much. And she said to me, Marcy, you're going to be a great general pediatrician. And what I heard in my head was, you better be a general pediatrician, honey, because you can't do this. You can't handle death. You're doing it all wrong. And it was only after Andy died that I realized that's not what she meant.
Yeah.
What she meant was, you care. You are going to take such good care of families, and you are showing such good care to my baby and to me. You're going to be a blessing to others. Yeah. And until Andy died, so for probably 17, 18 years, I thought she meant that I just was terrible at being around dying children. So all that time, I thought that was the only time I screwed up. But really, it's the only time I did it right.
Wow. Wow.
It's the only time I let them know that I was a person and that their child mattered to me.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I showed a little bit of humanity, because for the most part, I would keep it together and I may go home and get upset and cry and all of this, but I never let that happen in front of a family.
Right. Because that's your your job. You
that's my job. But it turns out being a person is more important in that setting than being a doctor. When someone's child has died, you show them that you're a person.
Agreed.
So anyway, now I actually do some talking with medical students and residents in training and trying to help people see that a little bit, just to help them maybe learn it a little bit ahead of time so they don't, you know, learn it way too late.
Way too late.
I did.
Yeah, that's good. Now that was a shift for you. Has your husband said anything to you as far as this happening to Andy has made me do this differently?
It's very different for him too. I mean, honestly, it was hard for him to go back. He went back a few weeks after Andy died. I actually tried to go back to work after Andy died a few weeks after Andy died, and I failed miserably. I cried between every patient. It was awful. I actually ended up staying home for a full year before. And we can go into that a bit later, what kind of got me out of that. But my husband will say it has changed him. And what the big things with him that it's changed is more with other people that he works with.
Yeah.
Other doctors, other nurses, other people, because he is so willing to talk about the hard stuff and open about that, like things that they would not normally disclose, they disclose to him.
Yeah.
Like people talk about stuff or people mention, you know, he had one, this was only not that long after Andy died. It was in the fall or something. And somebody's neighbor's son had died. And they said, I just don't know what to do. I can't believe it. I can't believe this happened. I always used to see that kid. He was always out mowing the lawn. I don't know what to do. And, you know, my husband turned to him and he said, mow the lawn.
Yeah.
That's what you do. Yeah. You don't have to say anything. But you know what? If you mowed that lawn for those people, that's going to be a lot. Because how hard is it going to be for them to mow the lawn now their teenage son always mowed the lawn? So it's just some of those little bits of advice on that they just turn to him for now. It's really interesting. And he's just so much more willing to talk about it, and he'll tear up in the OR and it's okay. And
different. Yeah. Because now you're a person now.
Yeah.
Those soft spots that you didn't used to have, you know.
Right. Yeah,
losing a child just brings on a whole nother level of sensitivity and understanding
and compassion.
And compassion. Yes. Yes. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. How's the other kids?
You know, it's a struggle. It's a struggle. My daughter especially has lots of struggles. My son is doing okay. My foster son, he's doing pretty well too. He's out on his own and, you know, living in his own house and a mechanic and doing well. So it's all variable, I would say, you know,
With the, you're in Andy's room and it's the same.
I am in Andy's room.
And it's the same. And I totally relate. Alana's room is the same. How do the other kids or even your husband, do they respect that space? Do they know this is a way mom makes it through?
Yeah, it's so funny. It's so funny because Angie's room is right at the top of the stairs and the other kids had to walk past. We all kind of have to walk past.
Yeah.
And my daughter always wanted the door shut. And I always wanted it open. And it was like, you know, this kind of conversation that we had to have about it. And in fact, now my daughter is back home and living in the basement because she just can't walk past the room.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I have such a hard time with it shut. It's almost when it's shut, I almost pretend for a second and think for a second that he's in there sleeping.
Yeah.
And when it's open, it's a reminder to me that he's not there. And I needed to be reminded that he wasn't there. I needed to see the room empty, because when the door was shut, then I could imagine it still full. And it just was too hard for me. I just had such a hard time. I mean, it was so sudden.
Yeah.
Everything that the shock and the denial and all that business just could last so long, because I just couldn't wrap my head around it. And for me, I wanted the door open to see that it was real, that he really wasn't there. And my daughter just wanted it out of sight, out of mind. So, I mean, honestly, the best thing was that after my foster son moved out is to let my daughter move down in the basement and not have to be up here, because then we could both kind of have what we needed, which is huge. I mean, you just have to have so much compromise all the time.
You do. You do. Now, I'm the opposite. Alana's door stays closed because until we want to spend our time in there. Until, you know, we all, Alana is the baby of three. I have my son is the oldest and then my daughter. So it stays closed until we all want our own time.
Oh, I see.
Alone in the room. And the opposite of what you said, with the door being closed, kind of gives me a comfort of.
Yeah.
That space being used.
Well, and now it's in the past 6 months. So we didn't use it at all until probably 6 to 8 months ago when I moved the desk in here and we started recording. I started recording the podcast in here, and it just felt right at that point in time. It felt like I was involving Andy in the process of doing the podcast.
Oh, that's.
And I do want to talk about that a little bit, because it was a pretty tremendous part of my healing, because, you know, I told you I tried going back to work. It was a disaster. I really cried between every patient. I would go, I would see this patient. I would see a patient. They would all look at me with this pity look in their eyes, which I just couldn't even handle. I tried to just talk about their kid, but it was just, I couldn't handle the look, and seeing all of these unbroken families. And also my mind wasn't great. I wouldn't always remember the names of medications even. It was like, I just felt like I wasn't on my game at all. And I cried between every patient. I'd see a patient, I'd go out and cry. I'd see a patient, I'd go cry. And there's like, this is not sustainable. You know, I remember one of my last days, I was looking at the information that the family wanted to talk about before, and they were talking about their two-year-old wouldn't take a nap or something. And I'm like, I can't have this conversation with somebody. I cannot have a conversation about your two-year-old not taking a nap when my baby's dead.
Nothing makes sense.
I just couldn't do it. And I knew that it was important, and I knew that somebody had to have the talk with them, but it can't be me. I am not in an emotional place where I can talk about your two-year-old not napping.
Yeah.
I just can't. And so I took a leave. I mean, I took a long leave, and I got to the point where I didn't think I was ever going to go back. I remember talking. I then started seeing that my therapist, who is a grief therapist, she's awesome. She pretty much only sees bereaved moms or trauma. I mean, some type of trauma. And I remember saying to her, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this anymore. I don't think I can be a pediatrician anymore. And I remember her saying, if you want to, we will get you there. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I kept seeing her, but we got to the next summer, and my managing partner said, so we're thinking maybe we should start giving your patients to other doctors. And I said, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to be able to come back. And in the meantime, a couple months before, I had decided I was going to start looking for a podcast for bereaved parents. I'm like, there's got to be a podcast for bereaved parents. My husband had a podcast. He had a medical podcast. Now he has a Michigan State basketball podcast. So anyway, he's like a podcast guy. So I thought, there's got to be one. And I start looking. This is in 2008 or 2019, like winter 2019. And I look, I can't find one. And I looked and looked and couldn't find one. And then my husband came home from work, and I said, I was looking for a podcast today for bereaved parents. And they had a few on grief. I mean, it wasn't that they didn't have any on grief, but they just didn't have any for bereaved parents. And it's such a different thing, right? I mean, I lost my mom when I was in college, so I know what that's like. And honestly, when Andy died, I was kind of thinking, well, I'm going to be better prepared for this than Eric, because I've gone through deep grief because I lost my mom when I was 21 years old. Turns out it didn't prepare me at all, like nothing. So he said, there has to be a podcast. There's a podcast for everything. And he looks and looks and he says, there's not a podcast. And I inexplicably said to him, I think I'm supposed to start one. And then I immediately wanted to take the words back, because I was like, what was that?
Where did that come from?
This is crazy. Yeah. I don't know anything about technology. I don't know anything about podcasts. I don't know any, like, no, I'm like panicky. And, but then I said it, I had said it. And once I said it, and then my husband's like, oh, okay. And you know, he finds a guy who wants to do a website for me, and he starts wanting to teach me about podcasts, and he's like doing all this. And I said, I don't know. I don't think so. And he said, just do three. Let's do three. I'm going to commit to just do three. I said, okay. So we're going to record one with him. And when, what was really funny is we did this. I thought I had everything right. We go through the whole hour. Turns out I hadn't recorded the entire thing. So we ended up having to do the whole thing again. And it was better the second time. So it was, it was God's grace that we didn't press record the first time. And then I had become, I had really got involved very early in a grief support group. Like just 3 weeks after Andy died, I started going to a grief support group. It was amazing. And and their director, I interviewed her for one of the episodes. And then a good friend of mine whose 12-year-old daughter had died, I interviewed her as well. So I'm like, we're just doing three. And we released three and we put out a press release, and then it was on the local news. And of course they totally picked up the story on the local news, because the year before, you know, I was the biggest, we were the biggest news story out there when Andy died, putting this beautiful choir boy, having him singing on the TV, and mama pediatrician and all of that. We were a story for a week. Right. So then they put, you know, featured me again and showed pictures of the accident and what I'm doing now, which, I mean, it was good, because it's gave me a little bit of a boost to start. And yeah. And so we released in September of 2019. And I remember very specifically my first Apple review, because it was a woman who I've since become friends with, who's from Tennessee, and said, my son died, and it was, it had been only 2 or 3 weeks since he died. And I wasn't able to get out of bed until I listened to an episode this morning. Thank you.
Wow.
And I said to my husband, okay.
That's what it's about.
Okay. I guess we'll keep going.
Yeah.
And now, you know, yesterday I just released episode 195, and we're working on doing something really special for episode 200 coming up here. Just featuring and talking about every single parent we've had on over, over the last 4 years. And, but what was even more remarkable really is that I, you know, we started doing all this recording in August, getting things set up, released in September. I was able to go to back to work and start seeing patients in November.
It's a huge
November of 2019. We had this, oh, just as a big outbreak, kids were really sick and are shorthanded. And I said, I can come help out. And well, pretty soon my helping out became kind of going on the schedule. And by January, I was back on the schedule 2 days a week. And by February, I was back to working the same hours that I had worked before the accident. And I really feel like it was because I had a purpose for my grief now. I wasn't just flailing around, not knowing what to do. I had like this grief, and I worked 2.5 days a week. So I didn't work at all on Tuesdays or Fridays. And I was like, okay, Tuesdays and Fridays are my grief days. I just do grief stuff on Tuesdays and Fridays. I work on Always Andy's Mom stuff, the podcast, the website, the blog. Those were the days when I could think about my grief and really spend time with Andy. And then it gave me a chance that on those other days, on Mondays and Wednesdays and Thursdays, I could go to work and I could care for other families and other kids. And in fact, I think now, which I hate to even admit this, or I really hated to admit it at first, I think I'm better than I used to be, because I think I care about them in a different way than I ever could before. And I understand the suffering way more than I did. And, you know, when I see a kid and I mean, I think back a few months ago, somebody coming in whose dad had died since I last saw him. We talked about their grief. You know, we talked about what that was doing. We talked about all of that. And I would have probably avoided that subject.
Oh, yeah.
Been like, well, if they don't bring it up, it's probably fine. No, it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not. And they're all telling me, you know, and she's like, no, it's okay. I'm like, no, it's not okay. And I know it's not okay. Let's talk about it.
Yes.
So anyway, it's amazing what finding a little bit of purpose can do for your healing.
Wow. Those two words right there. This is the purpose of Alana's song podcast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to rewind just a little bit.
Yeah.
Once you started doing the podcast.
Yeah.
Walking in the purpose. You started to bring on the healing.
Yes.
Which brought you to, wait a minute, I think I can go back to work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
So the purpose of my podcast for Angel Moms is to find the purpose in the journey. And yep. I get it all the time. I don't know what my purpose is. I don't know what my purpose is. And this is why I have moms come on. So with you speaking, this is just really vital. Because as you began to do something through the grief, that's where the healing and the purpose came.
Well, and what's really funny is I told you did three interviews before we released, and one of them, which now I can't remember if I interviewed Stephanie on two or three, I don't know, it's one of the two, as I was talking to her, and she had lost her 12-year-old, and she had gone to bereaved mom's retreat. And she said in that retreat, they had to work on thinking about what is your identity? Mm. What is your identity as a woman? Before this happened, after this happened, what is your identity? Because her daughter had special needs. And so she was Kian's mom. And that's what she did. So much of her life was taking care of her child. And that's what the retreat was. It was all moms who lost their children with special needs and challenges. And so it's very hard when that is your identity, because then you feel like you've lost all of your identity. Mm-hmm. And so as I'm sitting there interviewing her about this, I started thinking to myself, what is my identity?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, well, shoot, I'm not a pediatrician anymore. I feel like I'm a cruddy mom now. I mean, I'm still a mom, but not any good. And like, I'm going through all of these things. And then I came to it, like at my core, what am I? And I thought, well, I'm a caregiver. I care for people. That's like what I'm good at doing.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm a pediatrician, why I've done all this. And I thought, how can I turn my identity as a caregiver and use it in my grief? And then I had already started. I mean, I didn't even really realize that I had already started, but like, and that's why I feel like God put that idea in my head before I even knew why or anything about it, that I started doing the podcast, because now I'm already done three episodes and I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is it. This is how I continue to be a caregiver as a bereaved person.
Yeah.
I can now help care for bereaved people and help give bereaved people hope. Right?
Wow.
So that's how I do it. And this way, I'm a caregiver with Andy. I'm a caregiver with Andy right at my side the whole time.
Yeah.
This is not me doing this outside of my grief. This is me doing this inside of my grief. And that changed everything.
That is so, so good. Because you've hit it on the head with what I've been trying to tell other moms. I'm just saying it'll come. It's most likely it's what you've already been doing.
In just a little different way.
Yeah. I've always been a speaker. I've always been a singer, but it's just a different lane.
Yeah.
Just a different lane. If you're a baker, most likely it's still in baking, but you're giving that in the time of grief.
What have I been doing for 20 years? I've been taking care of parents. Wow. Right? Wow. I've been taking care of parents whose children are living, though, helping them care for their living children. Yeah. This is just a different way, and it's just a different set of parents. And they're, I don't get to see their kids, but gosh, I get to learn about them and hear about them and walk with them in their grief a little bit. Right?
This is
so in that way, it's a lot the same, like you said.
Yeah. This is excellent, mamas, for all you mamas listening who are just wondering and just, I'm lost. I don't know what to do. I want to do something, but I don't know what. She just gave the keys. She just gave the keys.
And it doesn't have to be big. It can be little. I mean, it's so funny because I have moms on all the time. And sometimes they write to me and goes, I would love to be on your show and talk about my child, but I haven't done anything. Like, yes, you have.
Yeah.
You got out of bed this morning.
Yeah.
You did something. I mean, don't hold yourself back and belittle what you've done. Like, getting up in the morning is a big deal.
Huge.
You know, I think back, you know, some people I've had on have big foundations and do all of this stuff or have written books or this, that. And some of them say, you know, I pick up 5 Starbucks gift cards and I bring them to the children's hospital every year on my daughter's birthday.
Like,
Okay. That's just as important.
Yes.
Just as important as the person that wrote the book or started a foundation. Yeah. Do you know what those 5 Starbucks gift cards mean to somebody whose child is dying in the hospital?
A lot.
That cup of coffee meant a lot.
Wow.
So, I mean, don't think that what you're doing isn't important.
Mm-hmm.
And just being present and being ready with an ear when someone else is going through something hard.
Yeah.
I mean, I think back, this was not, it was a full year after Andy died. I went back and I was in my golf league, you know, and overall it was very nervous for me to go there because when you're with other women, they all ask you how many kids do you have, which I just hate that question, which by the way, I tell everyone, this is what you say instead. When you meet someone new and you want to learn about their family or their kids or whatever, you say, tell me about your family. Okay. We need to have everyone change from how many kids you have to tell me about your family. Because if you say, tell me about your family, I can tell you just about my living children and not feel guilty about not saying anything. I can tell you about Andy. I can tell you about whatever I want. If I want to talk about my brother in Iowa or my parents, I can do whatever. That question leaves you so much more openness. So it's not as stressful to be around other people. So if I could do one thing for the whole world, I would have that question be replaced. But anyway, so I'm there, I'm at this dinner and someone had gone through this, was going through a messy, horrible, horrible divorce. It was really bad. And I turned to her and I said, how you doing? And she said, I'm fine. And I looked at her and I just said, liar. And she looked at me and she said, yeah, you're right. It's been really hard.
You're right. Yeah.
And that's how I've changed, because a year before Andy had died, if she would have said fine, I still would have been wondering how she really doing, but I wouldn't have come right out and said liar, because now I feel like I can say that because they all know I'm a mess. Right? I don't have this perfect life. So it's not like they have to live up to something that I'm doing that's way up here, because I'm way down here. So it's okay if you're down in the basement with me, because I'm already there.
Oh, yeah.
So let's just hang out in the basement together a little bit.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. Yeah.
So
that is good, because trust us, we do not have it together.
No,
at all.
Nope. Not even close.
All. We have our days just like all the other mamas.
Right. I mean, you So it'll be 5 years in August. Mm-hmm. I can't tell the story without crying.
Yeah.
I mean, you heard me.
Yeah.
I cry. Yeah. I still cry a lot. I do the podcast. There are many episodes where I am crying.
Oh yeah.
And that is okay. That is okay. I can cry. And I mean, it's just important to just know that that's fine. And I don't have to have it all together.
There's and, no right.
You know, some people don't understand. And if they don't, they don't. In some ways, I don't want them to, right? If they understand, it's because they've lived it. And I don't want them to have lived it. So think that I'm weird, that I'm still crying 5 years after Andy's gone. That's okay.
Yeah.
You would too. You know, they would too. They just don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. I tell people all the time, it's just, we learn how to walk with a crutch. That's all. That's all. Like an amputee.
Yeah.
The arm or the leg is gone. You just learn how to maneuver with it gone.
You know? And that's like when people say something and, you know, the tears come and then they go, oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Like, don't be sorry.
Yeah.
I'm actually happy that you brought him up.
Yeah.
If the tears came, it's just because they're just below the surface mm-hmm. all the time. Mm-hmm. So maybe it brought it up a little bit, but in general, I love that, that you know, that they said something.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes. This is so good, mamas. I'm soaking it in. Wow. Getting a lot of healing here.
Good. That's the whole thing. I mean, when I started the whole website, the whole everything, what was it to do was to try to bring hope and healing to grieving families. I mean, that's what we both are working on, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Hope and healing.
So I just got a couple of more, one more question, but before I get to my last question, go ahead and let all the moms know your platforms, where you can be reached. What's your social media? Do you have any blogs, books, what you got? Give it to us.
All right. So my website is just andysmom.com. So that's very, very easy. And I'm on Instagram and Facebook at Always Andy's Mom. So I have a Facebook page and Instagram. I actually have some Twitter too, but I don't really use it very much. So I do post every week the podcast to that. So on any podcast player, my podcast is called Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom, because my husband told me you have to have something in there about child loss or people will not find you. So, which I think I sort of get that, because it's funny. I had a guy on after I started, and he said, I take offense to you because I had a podcast before 2018. And I said, like, it doesn't count if I can't find you. He had called it Heart to Heart with Michael. Like, Heart to Heart with Michael says nothing about, you know, a parent or a grieving parent or anything. Now it's called Bereaved But Still Me. So anyway, that's one too. So anyway, any podcast player, really, you can find Losing a Child, Always Andy's Mom.
Yeah.
So that's how you find me. My son does all my social media. So I do little clips and then my 16-year-old son puts them up for me. So if they're not up, it's because he's been too busy.
My son too. My son is the techie.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just lights, camera, action. My son is the tech behind
it. We do the same. This is awesome. You and I.
Yeah.
This was meant to be, getting us connected.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. And the same with the title of my podcast. I said, okay, you know, because I'm Alana Song, wherever you find me, I'm Alana Song. But I had to put Angel Mom in there.
Yeah. So, right. Exactly. Yeah. Because otherwise people don't find you.
Yeah. Yep. So, yes, we got a lot going on in common here.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Okay. So here it is. This is the question that I ask all my mamas before we end the podcast. Okay. Uh-huh. So Marcy, what is your hopes of heaven?
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So many, right? I mean, so I mentioned this briefly, that my mom died when I was in college, right? And so I've been thinking a lot about heaven really since losing her, because she was just 42 years old. She was younger than I am now.
Wow.
And I do have to say, it was a bit of a, when Andy died, there's a little bit of me that was happy that my mom got to meet one of my kids. So when I think of heaven, I just think of being reunited with my Andy, being reunited with my mom, thinking of all that they have gotten to experience now together in this time.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's been almost 5 years that they've been there together. It's been, you know, 27 or 28 since my mom's been gone. So that's a long time. But, you know, I guess I think about that. I just think about that. And I think about the wonderful music that they must be able to make together. Because I always sang. I'm the one that, and my husband can't sing at all. So my son, Andy, he did get his musical talents from me, and I got mine from my mom. So,
wow, they're singing.
They must be making some pretty beautiful music together too.
I love it. I love it, Marcy. I love, love, love.
See, you get me all teared up again. That's just happening.
Yeah. I love your hopes of heaven. Like you, I've always thought about heaven. Always.
Yeah.
Even before Alana moved to heaven, I've always. So that's why I had to put that in the title.
You know what's funny is I have two cool stories about Andy with heaven. If we have another minute.
Yes.
Do we have another minute?
Yes, I love
it. So the first one was, so when he was about 7 years old, I picked them all up from school. Mm-hmm. They're all in the back of the van. And the whole time, Andy's talking about this picture that he drew. He drew a family picture. And you know, one of those big pictures that you draw in elementary school that has the tree and the sun in the corner and the family and all this. And the whole time he's talking about it, so excited to show it to me. I'm like, okay. So we get home. I open up the door. I'm unbuckling him from his seat. And he's opening up this picture. And I look at the picture. So this is before we had Valeriano in our family, our foster son. So we were a family of five.
Uh-huh.
There are four people in the picture. Ooh. I look at the picture. There are four people in the picture. Ooh. I said to Andy, why are there four people in the picture? Not five. And I'm thinking to myself, is he mad at somebody? Who did he leave out? This is really weird. And he looked at me and he said, well, Mom, I'm not in the picture. And I said, why aren't you in the picture? And he said, well, I'm in heaven. I'm not going to grow up all the way.
Oh.
Wow. And I remember thinking to myself at that moment, oh, no, God, no, God, no, 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 no. Because I knew, a little bit of me in my heart knew that it was true. Like, I knew that that's actually was going to happen. And that's exactly what happened. Because he grew partially up, but he didn't grow up all the way. And he was in heaven. And I mean, it was just like, I didn't even keep the picture. I told people about it, though. Mm-hmm. I told my husband about it. I told a couple of my best friends about it. I told several people because it bothered me so much. And I'm really glad that I did, because I actually told that story at his funeral.
Wow.
And people that I told, they remembered. They all remembered the story of the picture and the fact that he was going to be in heaven. Then the second story about heaven with him is going back to him being in the Grand Rapids Choir of Men and Boys. And so the year before, that winter before he died, that whole year, we did this Bible study, and it was on Revelation. Uh-huh. And in Revelation, there's so much talk of heaven, right? So much talk of heaven. And they were in the car. I wasn't me driving. It was one of my friends driving the three boys, her son and my two boys. Mm-hmm. And they're driving home from choir. And Charlie, one of the boys, was talking somehow about how he was scared of dying, upset, didn't want to talk about death, something like that. And Andy said, what? You're not excited for heaven? I am so excited for heaven. It's going to be amazing when we die. It's going to be amazing when we go to heaven. This is months before he died. He was going on with Charlie about how to not be afraid of death because heaven was going to be so insanely awesome. And so his mom told me that story after Andy died, because she said it was really profound to her because she was listening to him, because she was like, wow, that kid's got some faith. I don't think of heaven that way. I can't believe he's thinking of heaven that way and like excited to go in that way. So it really impacted her just hearing him say it, even in life. But obviously after he died, she felt like that. And then I have one more heaven story with him. So yes, I have all sorts of heaven stories. The last one goes to the night he died. So the night he died, we were now at the hospital and my daughter was still at home. So it was terrible because she was at home. She had no idea what was going on. I called my pastor. I said, there's been an accident. Andy said, somebody needs to go get Catherine, mm-hmm. my daughter. And he said, we'll send Pastor Dan. He's another pastor. We're going to send Pastor Dan. And so Pastor Dan was called, you know, Andy Larson's dead. Catherine's at home. You need to go get her and bring her to the hospital. Mm-hmm. And so he had to call his wife because he was on his way home. And he said, you know, there's been a terrible accident. Andy Larson's dead. I'm going to need to do this. And she was giving her son a bath, her 2-year-old son a bath. And she got really upset, obviously, by this. And she got him out of the bathtub, but she had to step out. She stepped out in the hallway to try to pull herself together.
Yes.
So her son wouldn't see her crying. And she gets all together and she goes back in. And he looked at her and he said, he's in heaven with his mom, or he's in heaven with his friends, mom.
Wow.
And she said, who is, buddy? And he looked at her and his head kind of turned and he said, some boy, I don't know his name. Mm-hmm. And he didn't know any of that. Nothing.
Yeah.
She stepped out, you know, had a little conversation, didn't let on anything that anyone had died, anything about heaven. And he just said, some boy is in heaven with his friends.
Wow.
So anyway, so I have 3 cool heaven stories. So since you like to talk about heaven, we had to give you those.
All 3 are way cool. I love heaven stories.
Yes.
Love heaven stories. My whole library is heaven books.
Yeah. And I do feel like sometimes with little kids like that, like Andy at 7 and this little boy at 2, 2.5, it's like the veil is kind of thinner sometimes for them, right?
Yeah.
Like they just take things at face value that we would think is a little bit weird, and they mm-hmm. just kind of go with it. So,
go with it.
You know, anyway, I love it.
Oh, wonderful.
But all of those things gave me comfort. I mean, we got the night he died. I remember my husband saying, it's in the middle of the night, and he said, remember the picture? I said, of course. Mm. I can't think of anything else because it's exactly what happened. And if you would have asked Andy the day before he died, or even hours before he died, about that picture, I can guarantee you he didn't remember anything about it.
Look at that.
I really feel like God gave him that glimpse for a second just so he could tell me, so that I could have that later. Oh, and then it went out of his head. He didn't remember any of that. No way he did. But it was a gift to me to know and just have that assurance that mm-hmm. at 7 years old, Andy knew he was going to be in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I was going to ask, because I can go on and on. It's heaven. Do you believe he just knew?
He just knew for that instant. I don't think he continued to think about it. He went on and played baseball that night and didn't think twice about heaven. I think it was more for me, to be honest.
That comfort. Your mom is going to need this picture in 7 more years.
Yeah. Yeah.
In 7 more years, your mom is going to need this picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to need this memory so that she doesn't doubt, you know, that you're there.
Awesome. I love it. Marcy, I'm not going to hold you because I can go.
I know we probably already went over what you normally would, but it's just the way it is.
Yeah. So I just want to thank you for bringing hope and healing and comfort. And most importantly, purpose.
Yeah.
Purpose for us mamas out here. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the healing walking in the purpose. So,
and you're not going to be the same, but it doesn't mean that you can't be, yeah, you can't keep walking the walk, yeah, right? It's, yeah, just going to look a little different.
It's just going to look a little different. Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. This was beyond wonderful, beyond wonderful. And I want to thank you. Thank you for just joining me and just,
yeah,
telling us your story about your wonderful Andy.
Well, now you'll have to come on mine.
I just tell me when and I'm there.
All right. And other people, you can email me at Marcy, M-A-R-C-Y, at andysmom.com. Yeah. I'd love to hear stories. I love to hear stories.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Well, we will talk to you soon, mamas. Thanks, Marcy, for joining us today. Bye-bye.